That's what I'm talking about, live from the palatial yet not overly ostentatious studios of CBS Sports Radio here in beautiful New York City, sitting on top of the 10th floor of 345 Hudson Street. Welcome on in to a Wednesday edition of the Zach Gelb Show across all the great local CBS Sports Radio affiliates, Sirius XM, Channel 158, and that free Odyssey app. 855-212-4CBS is the number to jump on in. 855-212-4227. You can always get at me on Instagram, where I'm straight flexing, or via the good old cesspool of Twitter, at Zach Gelb. That's Z-A-C-H-G-E-L-B. Monster guest list today. Coming up 20 minutes from now, prime time, Deion Sanders, the Pro Football Hall of Famer and, of course, coach at Colorado, 10 days away from his first game as the HC of the Buffaloes of Colorado, with their matchup going up against TCU at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. Michigan star football player, a man that could have won the Heisman last year if he didn't get injured towards the end of the season. Blake Corum will make his return to the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. And then also at 8:40 p.m. Eastern, 5:40 p.m. Pacific, we got to do a little first and goal as we'll clap it up, little Skull Nation, and preview the Minnesota Vikings with Pete Bursich. So a whole lot to do today, but first up, producing the extravaganza for the next 4 hours is no other than Hot Take Hickey.
I don't know about that Hot Take Hickey.
So let's start with the San Francisco 49ers. Today they announce Sam Darnold's going to be QB2, the backup quarterback, and Trey Lance is going to be quarterback 3. Now, according to Diana Rossini, the 49ers have been shopping Trey Lance for much of the offseason, and the 49ers haven't received a significant trade offer so far for Trey Lance. So let's just get to this right out of the gate. Should the San Francisco 49ers trade Trey Lance? I say no. Will they? I think they probably will. But I don't think it benefits the San Francisco 49ers to trade Trey Lance. I know you 49ers fans that absolutely hate my guts all believe that Brock Purdy, rock out with your Brock out, who looked pretty awesome last year, is going to be a stud. We don't know that. The guy has started 5 regular season games and 3 postseason games. I will admit, Brock Purdy played some really good football last year. We've seen guys before get thrown into the fire when they're not expected to and go on to have great careers and capitalize off the opportunity. But I can't go into this season, and we know the 49ers are Super Bowl or bust. We know they have a loaded team, great offensive line. You got Christian McCaffrey, my BFF Debo Samuel probably should have a bounce back year. The defense is loaded. But with all that being said, even though Brock Purdy's in a good situation, it doesn't mean Brock Purdy's going to be a great quarterback. And I still have Brock Purdy entering this season as a question mark. And 3 things could happen. He could fall flat on his face, he could get hurt, or he could play really damn well and keep the job throughout the entirety of the season. But throughout the years with the 49ers, I just can't say that's a slam dunk, that it's definitely going to happen, that Brock Purdy's going to start the season and finish the season as the starting quarterback. Because you look in the last few years, it was Jimmy G's the guy. Then they got to replace Jimmy G. Oh, even when Jimmy G was there, maybe they'll try to go get Kirk Cousins. Okay, Jimmy G's now the guy again. All right, now we're going to draft Trey Lance. Oh, it's back to being Jimmy G's the guy. Now Trey Lance is going to get an opportunity. Trey Lance gets hurt, and then you eventually go to Brock Purdy. And sure, in the small sample size, Brock Purdy had a lot of success. I can understand with the way that the 49er season ended, just getting destroyed at Lincoln Financial Field and unfortunately having Brock Purdy get hurt, why you could say, Brock Purdy, if he was there in that NFC Championship game, I wonder what it would have looked like. And it doesn't give you closure, and it makes you think what could have been. But just because Brock Purdy played 8 games and started 8 games doesn't mean that he's going to be this rock star this season. I'm not saying it can't happen, but it doesn't mean that it definitely will happen. And what's crazy here, when you go now through the depth chart, is I remember Bonta Hill from the game out in San Francisco in the Bay Area. He joined us like right at the start of the offseason, after Sam Darnold officially got to the 49ers, he's like, guys, the hype around Sam Darnold is real. Which I know Kyle Shanahan is just different with quarterbacks and he thinks it's just his system. But Sam Darnold's career highlights are seeing ghosts and getting mono. Sam Darnold was supposed to be the guy. He was a former third overall pick. And he ended up being a disaster with the Jets, and you could blame a lot of it on the Jets. And then in Carolina, yeah, he was running the football well, but he was never thought to be the guy. So all of a sudden, just because he's in a better environment, Sam Darnold's going to be this rock star? And I remember Bonta Hill saying to us, Zach, don't be surprised if Sam Darnold is starting week one. That was when we didn't know if Brock Purdy was going to be healthy. And I said to him, that's inconceivable to me. That's the definition of insanity because of the fact that Trey Lance has only started 4 games so far. And with the 3 first-round draft picks that they gave up for Trey Lance, they're already willing to wave the white flag? Like, think about that. If Brock Purdy wasn't ready, this team would be starting Sam Darnold week one compared to a quarterback that they gave up 3 first-round picks. So I remember we had a big-time back and forth with Bonta Hill, and it was like 7 days later where you just kept on hearing how John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan were talking about Trey Lance, and you just didn't believe them. They were trying to pump him up. It sounded like they were begging teams to make a trade for Trey Lance. And that shows you that this team had no confidence in Trey Lance. I remember saying to Bonta, you're going to end up being right about this thing if, in fact, Brock Purdy's not ready for week one, or bare minimum, Sam Darnold's going to be the second string quarterback this year. So I changed my tune on that rather quickly. But that's the wild part to me, Hickey, is that how quickly for a team that gave up 3 first-round picks to get Trey Lance, and I get it, they're in a win-now window, and you need someone that's ready to go. But Trey Lance hasn't really even got an opportunity. And I think a lot of this goes back to Kyle Shanahan did not originally intend when John Lynch moved up to 3 to draft Trey Lance. And since he wasn't all in on him, and since he got talked in to drafting Trey Lance, that's why I think Kyle Shanahan has quickly given up on Trey Lance. And I know how quick Kyle Shanahan rotates through quarterbacks. He kind of is like the guy that walks into the casino and plays roulette. And it's just, all right, have the quarterbacks spin around with the ball and see where the ball's going to land. And that's going to be who the starting quarterback is. But I've never seen anything like this. Like, we've seen busts before. We've seen teams move mountains to go get a player. But they've usually been given an opportunity. And guys like Jamarcus Russell didn't want to put in the work, and he stunk. You know, Ryan Leaf, it's been well documented off the field with his issues too. But at least those guys were given opportunities. It's crazy to me that it must be so bad behind the scenes with Trey Lance that after, what, 4 starts? 4 starts! That Trey Lance is already someone that they're going to put as QB3 and they're trying to do everything in their power to trade him when they gave up 3 first-round picks to go get the guy. That's something, and we've seen a lot of busts throughout the years. Jameis Winston, Marcus Mariota, Josh Rosen, Sam Darnold, right? We've seen a ton of busts. Zach Wilson. But these guys have been given an opportunity to resonate with the fan base, and sometimes you pull the plug quickly. But Trey Lance hasn't really been given an opportunity, especially now where how training camp, it's not like how it used to be, right? There's so many restrictions and things like that. So it's either so bad behind the scenes or they just don't believe in Trey Lance. But you can't say it's based off performance because you evaluate a player, ultimately, what do they do in a game? And he's had 4 starts and one of them, he got hurt. The other one was in a monsoon, right? Remember up against the Bears in that slip and slide game to start last year? So I look around here and I see a guy that's only had 4 starts and I'm just like, it's weird. It's wild. It's crazy. I've never seen a team give up on a quarterback so quickly with basically never really giving him a shot. So here we are today where the 49ers are basically cutting ties with Trey Lance, and it's not a matter of if they're going to move on. It's just a matter of when they're going to move on. And I don't think they should move on because of the fact how many times this organization the last few years rotates through quarterbacks. And even though Brock Purdy played really well last year in a small sample size of 8 starts, I don't know if that's going to continue this year. And if not, then they're going to go to Sam Darnold. But who has the confidence that Sam Darnold's going to be really good? Once again, he's known for getting mono and seeing ghosts. So what happens if you get through an opportunity here if you're the Niners and it's like, oh, Brock Purdy got hurt or just didn't live up to the hype, then Sam Darnold doesn't play well. Wouldn't you want to go back to Trey Lance and actually give him an opportunity to show that he belongs? But everything you read and everything you hear about how the 49ers handle this, they don't intend for him to be on the roster. And I think ultimately they will trade him, but I don't think they should. Because at this point, you're going to get nothing back for him. Like, if you got a fifth-round pick for him at this point, is that worth it? Where maybe at some point during the year, you're going to need him? But it's clear this coaching staff and this organization, they do not believe in Trey Lance. Because bare minimum, if they had any belief in Trey Lance, they would make him QB2. I get starting Brock Purdy with what he did last year. But you're going to tell me Sam Darnold beat out Trey Lance? What a mess this is. And this is like something I've never seen before. Hickey, how do you react to this?
I mean, as someone who, I guess, defended or was excited for Trey Lance, a little disappointing, but here's where I give the 49ers a lot of credit. They moved mountains to go from 12 to 3, gave up 3 first-round picks to go get Trey Lance. It's now worked out. I respect the fact that they are not holding on to what they gave up and being the reason why they're going to give him another opportunity. Their Super Bowl window is right now, and they realize Brock Purdy gives us a better chance. And even right now, Sam Darnold, with where he is, gives us a better chance. And they are not saying, oh, well, we gave up all this for Trey Lance. He was the former number 3 overall pick. We have to make him the starter. We have to make him the backup. They are truly treating the quarterback as a meritocracy, and I think that's hard for a lot of teams to do, and I respect it.
And they have the benefit, because any other organization, if they gave up that much for Trey Lance, the coach and the general manager would be fired. Would be fired if they quickly gave up this early on Trey Lance. They'd be setting up their departure. But you got to give, really, Lynch and Shanahan credit that even with swinging and missing on the quarterback consistently, they've been able to find a way each and every year where you wake up and you feel like they're in the NFC title game. And they've been to the Super Bowl one year. And ultimately, I don't believe until they get clarity on the quarterback position that they'll win a Super Bowl, but they could keep on getting close. But it's just really crazy to me how we're in this spot. Because you could even acknowledge that has Trey Lance even really been given much of an opportunity? Now, there's only so much you could evaluate in practice and in training camp with how it is. This guy has 4 career starts. That's it. Spread out over 2 years.
And like you said, the 2 most recent starts, one he got hurt in the first half against the Seahawks, and the other one was in a literal monsoon downpour against the Bears, where you can't actually evaluate how he is as a quarterback. So his 2 starts was a rookie year, like week 5 and I think week 13, somewhere spread out like that. Otherwise, you've got no real sample size to look at, but that's the only negative for when you're a really good team drafting a quarterback that high, because you rarely see it, is you don't have the benefit of time like most other first-round quarterbacks do, because usually their teams are bad, and you're not wasting a Super Bowl window by giving a guy an extra year or 2 to see what he's got.
So as I said, I think they shouldn't trade him, but I think they will trade him. Where are you at when you separate the should and the would here?
I don't think they should. I'm with you there, and I don't think they will.
Wow.
Last year, they had 5 quarterbacks. I'm going to count Christian McCaffrey in the NFC title game as the 5th quarterback. They went through 5 quarterbacks last year. They are the team that should know the most. We can't just throw one away. Even if you don't believe in Trey Lance, let's say right now, keep him on your practice squad or have him be the 3rd-string quarterback.
Well, he wouldn't be on the practice
squad. You still need to do that. You're right. So having him, again, be the 3rd-string quarterback is not exactly like a outrageous thing, because the 49ers should know your 3rd-string quarterback maybe is the most important quarterback for any team in the NFL.
And not only that, you can't find a way to use him in some goal line packages? You can't find some ways with his athleticism to use him in goal line packages as they did at times during his rookie season? I remember him running for that touchdown It was in a primetime game off to the left side.
Packers.
You can't find a way to do something like that. Like, what are you going to get back for Trey Lance? We've seen teams tell you that their quarterback's not their guy and still get something back. But when you have Kyle Shanahan, who's right, the quote-unquote quarterback whisperer, telling you he doesn't believe in him by making him third on the depth chart, what are teams going to give back for Trey Lance here?
I mean, a fifth-round pick feels a little generous.
And if you get a fifth-round pick, I think you're jumping up and down like a fat kid in a candy store.
And is a fifth-round pick worth it compared to not having him as QB3?
If I'm a team, I would give up a fifth-round pick for Trey Lance to be a backup. I would. But if I'm the 49ers, what does a fifth-round pick mean to you? I'm not saying you always have to be like Les Snead and be like, F those picks, but a fifth-round pick, if you pick well there, it's usually more luck than based off skill of all the scouts. So at that rate, with still uncertainty at your quarterback position, maybe you'll end up needing Trey Lance at some point. Maybe you will. And I would rather not get the fifth-round pick and keep Trey Lance on the roster, even if that means that at the end of the year, you're just cutting him and you're getting nothing back for him, Hickey. That I would definitely keep him on the roster if I'm the 49ers. It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. If you want to jump on into that conversation, 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227. What do you think will end up happening with Trey Lance? All righty, we'll take a break. When we come on back, prime time, Coach Prime, the Pro Football Hall of Famer, now at Colorado, Deion Sanders is going to join us right here on the Zach Gelb Show, but where else? CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show. We miss college football.
Bennett takes the snap and the shotgun, throws for the corner. Brock Bowers one-on-one. Caught! Touchdown! He ate him alive! Falls down into the end zone. Six more for Georgia.
We can't wait for the 2023 season.
Caleb Williams throws the fade in the corner. Oh, God! Touchdown, Trojans!
And we're counting down the days to kickoff.
Are we there yet?
No.
Are we there yet?
I said no.
Are we there yet?
What's wrong with your ears?
Here is your college football fix, only on the Zach Gelb Show.
Welcome on in. It is the Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on CBS Sports Radio. Let's go out to the guest line and welcome in the new head football coach at Colorado, 10 days away from their first game up against TCU, and that is the Pro Football Hall of Famer on behalf of California Almonds, and that is Coach Deion Sanders. Primetime, how you been?
How you doing? I'm really good, my man. How you doing?
Well, I'm doing fantastic. So my sister a few years ago moved out to Centennial, Colorado, so I'm hoping you bring the football team back. As I said, we're now 10 days away from the start of your football season. Just how has the job been going and how's the team starting to look?
Wonderful. If I could glance to the right now, I'm looking at a beautiful stadium, which is empty now, but I'm pretty certain it's going to be packed and sold out by the time we play our first home game. But I'm excited. I'm elated. The team is we had a great day of practice this morning. We practice the morning every morning, but it's looking good. I like what I see, and I see what I like.
Something that I liked, and sometimes college coaches don't do this, but they go to a place and they don't embrace the community and they lose sight of that. You did that right away. I love the social media content that you did, going to the restaurants and reviewing the restaurants and meeting with the people that run those businesses. Why was that so important to you, Coach, to embrace the community that you were joining?
Well, honestly, that's who we are anyway. I mean, that's our normal day. That's the way we move. That's the way we do things. And, you know, my son runs all our social media, so he's with me all the time anyway. I'm blessed to have three sons on campus and my youngest daughter on campus. So four of my five children are with me on a daily basis. And it's just wonderful. The people light up, you know, the energy, and they were anticipating what review would they get. You know, it was so hilarious. And now I tell you what, we have grits everywhere. We have grits everywhere in Colorado now, so it's easy to attain.
Well, how about that? You got to love it. Coach Deion Sanders here with us. You talked about your family that you're trying to do this together with. Your son, obviously, the starting quarterback, Shador Sanders. We all saw, or a lot of us saw, what he was able to do for 2 years at Jackson State. For people that weren't able to see the big-time numbers that he put up,
what kind of quarterback are they going to see when Colorado kicks off this fall?
Well, Shador is extremely smart. He's extremely intelligent. He knows where to go with the ball, what to do with the ball. He protects the ball tremendously. And he's just a darn serious ball player, man. He takes this thing really serious, and he loves the darn game and lives the game. Both of my kids, Shiloh, the safety, he starts at safety. He's up here until 7, 8, 9 o'clock studying and watching film. So they really embrace the challenges that they have before them, but they love the darn game of football, which I adore.
To coach your sons, just what does that mean from the father perspective? Some coaches tell me they love it. Other coaches go, I wish they kind of went somewhere else.
We don't know no other way. I've coached them their whole entire life since the first day they put on cleats, since the first interest they showed in football. I've been their coach. I've only not coached Shiloh. I think it was 1 year when he was at the University of South Carolina. Then he came and transferred over with us at Jackson. So that's all we know. So I love it. And all my kids, I've coached all my kids at certain levels.
Coach Prime, Deion Sanders, the Pro Football Hall of Famer with us. Coach, everyone talks to me about culture and they never explain it. So I want you to explain how you envision, what is the culture of Colorado football going to be?
You know what? When I was at Jackson, everyone talked about culture, culture, culture. And I'm like, what is culture? Like, what is the definition of culture?
How you envision the program to run is what I would say.
That's your definition. Like a machine, like a well-oiled machine, like a darn California almond. You see how I'm getting.
That's why you're one of the all-time great entertainers, Deion.
Like a California almond that helps me recover immensely, like that. But no, honestly, I want this to be an energetic place that is a pipeline to the NFL. Not only that, a pipeline to young men being great fathers, great men, you know, great siblings, great sons. Just a pipeline of success, and not just athletic success, just success in general.
Don't you worry. We'll talk about California almonds in just a moment. The head coach at Colorado, Deion Sanders, with us. Travis Hunter has also been someone that's name has been all over the place. He's a dog on both sides of the ball. For people that aren't familiar with him, using your coaching kind of analysis of it, what do you kind of see in the football player that Travis is?
I feel like Travis is the most exciting player in college football on both sides of the ball, either side of the ball. I feel like Travis Hunter will be drafted first round on both sides of the ball. So Travis Hunter is a problem. He's not only a problem for the opposing teams, but he's going to be a problem when he goes to the next level to figure out what he's going to do. But he's going to tell you, I'm going to play both ways because that's just who he is. Very dominant, very dominant, workaholic, studies his butt off, and he just has a passion to be great, a passion to be great, and he does not take plays off. He's a dog.
Some coaches, and I'm sure your background factors into this, but some coaches would say, just go be perfect on one side of the ball, forget the other side of the ball. Why haven't you done that?
Because that's who he is. Why would I change who the young man is and what he desires to be? It's my obligation and my job to enhance what he wants to be and really help him and lead him and serve as his navigational system through life. And that's what I'm trying to do. He just left my office probably about 10 minutes ago trying to steal some shoes or something in here, though. But that's just who he is. He's a young man. I call him a kid because he's like one of my sons. But he loves life and he loves the game so much. And I wish I could just impregnate all my kids with that attribute.
You're taking over a program and they need you. You only won one game. Everyone, we talk about it all the time. What can people expect from Deion Sanders and this Colorado team in year one? So since I have you here, Coach, what do you say to that question?
Well, we're going to win. We're going to win. We're going to win. And we're going to minimize mistakes. We're going to play smart, tough, fast, disciplined football. The guy's going to display character throughout the entirety of the game prayerfully. But we're going to win. We're going to do some things that hadn't been done. We're going to get our players to the next level. It hadn't been a day that we practiced that it hadn't been NFL scouts here, and that's a blessing. to these kids when they look over and see a coach with a certain hat on representing the NFL team. They hadn't had that in quite some time, and now they see that. So they understand there's opportunity as well.
People have doubted you and people have questioned you your entire life. I've always been someone saying, I want to see Deion Sanders get a big college football job. I was hoping it was going to be in the SEC when it was all that speculation. But what do you say to the people that before even playing a game up against TCU go, ah, Deion Sanders, he's not going to work at Colorado?
Well, I think we've had this simulation all life, all my life with doubt and ridicule and just ignorance and adolescence. So I embrace it. I adore it. I love it. I keep receipts from it. And I can't wait to display what we have. I'm like a kid on Christmas. I can't wait to open up this gift. I really can't.
I'll be looking forward to the clapback. There is no doubt about that. You'll probably be like someone used to work with Dave Portnoy at Barstool, popping bottle of champagne.
Hey, I love my guy. Dave Portnoy is I love him to life. He is one of my favorites because he's unapologetically himself at all times. And I love him for that.
Tell me what you're doing with California Almonds, Coach.
Oh, we're having a good time. We shot a tremendous commercial. I started smiling because several of our kids on our team shot the commercial with me and one of our assistant coaches. But to see some of those guys, and a couple of them were walk-ons, man, you got to understand, to see them, you know, shooting a national commercial and they're smiling, they're excited, they're happy and elated. It was darn believable, and I'm happy that California Almonds gave me that opportunity. But just overall understanding can help you recover from exercise. I'm trying to read my points to make sure I don't miss them. It can help you recover from exercise. Being in your prime starts with being consistent and working hard. That's what I've always done. I've always worked my butt off. I've always stayed in my prime, and I've always been smart about recovery. You got to understand, I've had 12 surgeries over the last 2 years. So recovery is everything for me. And I found out that eating a good amount of almonds helps me. I know you said, no, it can't. But no, it truly can. It has been studied and it truly can.
Well, I want to ask you one thing about the NFL before we let you run, because now you have the coaching background as well. Trey Lance, team that you played for, the 49ers, was announced today. He's going to be third on the depth chart. People are wondering what's going to happen with his future. Just what advice would you give to Trey Lance? Because it was only a few years ago, he was the third overall pick in the draft.
Yeah, you got to keep your head up. You got to hold on, because you could even understand how the season played out for them last year. And they went to what? The third quarterback, correct?
Yeah.
Right? I think the guy started
Brock Purdy.
Right. He started in the darn playoff game until he was injured. Like, come on. Stand still, stand firm, and work on your game. And if you truly believe you've got it, invest in it. And I believe in the kid. I think the kid has it. He just has to put it to work and put it to use and let people see it consistently. But you can't count yourself out. You never know how this life or this game evolves.
And in that divisional round, it was the 49ers up against the Cowboys, two teams you know well. The Cowboys did a great job in the defensive side of the ball, but offensively – the Cowboys didn't deliver. If you were in that Cowboys locker room, would you look at Dak Prescott and say, okay, this is a quarterback that we could win a Super Bowl with?
Yeah, I like Dak. Matter of fact, one of the most famous Cowboys just walked out 2 minutes before we got on air, and that's Michael Irvin.
Wow. So
he just walked out, and he's in the hallway right now, clowning and having a good time. But he came to practice today and gave an unbelievable speech to the team. And we ensued had a great practice. But I like Dak, man. I think Dak is a winner. I think he's a proven winner. I just want them, that whole team, to go to the next level. Well, I love Jerry Jones. Jerry Jones is my guy, so I love Jerry.
Well, I'll let you go enjoy some time with the playmaker, and I'm sure you guys will enjoy some California almonds as well. He's the head football coach at Colorado. Coach, good luck this year. We appreciate you doing this.
Hey, man, I appreciate you. It was an honor and a pleasure talking to you, man. I hope we do it again.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. So yesterday, I told you that I watched the first episode of the Urban Meyer Florida docuseries, and I thought the first episode was really damn good. And I know they didn't get into much of the controversy in the
in the first episode, but they had four episodes to get to, so I wasn't expecting to delve into much of the controversy right away in episode one. Maybe you would get to some of that, or hope you would get to some of that, in maybe episodes two, three, or four. So, Hickey, I've told you this before. I actually like it better when they release a docuseries week by week instead of just giving you everything at once, because I get hooked to something and then I'll just go binge watch it. And I watched one episode yesterday during the day, and then I finished the rest of it today, during the day. I'm disappointed in it, because after the first episode, I thought this had potential to be really good. And I'm really disappointed in one of my buddies who told me, oh, it was phenomenal. It was a great watch. I go, oh, my friend's a pretty tough critic. If he's saying it's phenomenal, it must have lived up to the hype. And after the first episode, who couldn't love it? With Brandon Seiler, like, he was tremendous. I thought Urban was good in the first episode, and even Tim Tebow. But then, in episodes 2, 3, and 4, the game recaps are really good. The training that they went to at the crazy hours of like midnight to 2 a.m., it's a wild thing to watch, where it's still compelling, it's still intriguing, it's still a fun watch, but when you know how much controversy surrounded those teams, and also how much controversy has surrounded Urban Meyer, they just glossed over all that stuff. Like, they talked about a player that they once had to kick off the team, and then unfortunately, a year later, he overdosed. And Urban Meyer said in the docuseries, you know, it was at that moment where we gave up on a kid, and I made a vow to myself, and I promised myself, we'll never give up on a kid again. So if that's the way that you justify some of the bad behavior that happened, okay, but we can't talk about it? Like, the biggest elephant in the room is Aaron Hernandez, right? You have to bring up Aaron Hernandez. The only time they brought up Aaron Hernandez twice in the docuseries. One, you saw him catching a touchdown, and that's not really bringing him up. The other was the bar fight that Aaron Hernandez got into, and Tim Tebow said people were saying racist things to Aaron Hernandez, then he kicked the crap out of all of them. You're not going to touch on what eventually happened, which was the murders? It's like, I know that that's when he's in the NFL, when he gets arrested for that stuff, but he's a Florida Gator. He's a big part of those teams. And the Pouncey twins were not involved here. They talk about the 2009 SEC championship game against Alabama, how they felt like they let that one and that season get away, and they should have won another national championship game. No mention of the Carlos Dunlap DUI. No mention of Zach Smith. And no mention, really, of Cam outside of, oh, they landed Cam, not why he didn't work out there in Florida. And there's a bunch more there. So it left you feeling that you needed more. Where I think, Hickey, because you said you haven't watched this yet. Is that right?
Tonight was going to be the night I was going to try to binge most of it. Yes, sir.
Well, hopefully I didn't just ruin it for you. But so I apologize for that. Like, I think you'll watch it, Hickey. And you're a big college football fan. You love college football. And you'll be like, okay, that was a fun watch. But you don't get into any of the real controversies. And that to me is like, all right, so we're just doing an infomercial pretty much for Urban Meyer because he was ran out of the NFL and deservedly so after 13 games and he was horrible as an NFL head coach. And he's had controversies and other stops like Ohio State. And now this is what, to make the image of Urban Meyer look better? Is that what the goal was of this docuseries? And don't get me wrong, like hearing Brandon Seiler, hearing Brandon Spikes, hearing Chris Leak, Tim Tebow, it's a fun watch, but you only really told half the story. And half the story could be really good, but you don't get into anything that was like not only negative, but some awful things that ended up happening. And that to me makes it feel as if, I don't want to say it was a waste of time, because I did enjoy, like, I enjoyed it. But I just throw my hands up in the air and I go, is that what this is at this point? Anytime now Netflix does one of these untold stories, it's just all going to be puff pieces pretty much. Because I still think there's a lot of untold stories here that they didn't get into with that football team. So I would still recommend watching it. but lower your expectations of where we were a day ago after episode one.
Well, that's frustrating because, yeah, most of us lived through that 06 to 09 yeah. run at Florida where we knew and watched them be so great. Now, we, like I said, this was, I at least was under the impression this is going to be about, sure, highlighting how great they were, but also highlighting the bad dudes on the team, highlighting the drama off the field that they had to deal with both in season and then also when they graduated and seeing, you know, again, with different guys doing different bad things, how you react and if you kind of saw things coming on the team, if it's just going to be a Florida, again, go Gators, let's get you fired up for the 2023 season by reliving the glory days. As a non-Florida fan, like most people are in the country, it's that's frustrating.
So here's what I don't get. Like, if you're afraid of hurting people's feelings, like guys that are still living that was associated with the school and you don't want to talk poorly about them, I'm not saying I understand that, but Aaron Hernandez is dead. Aaron Hernandez did awful things. Like, I don't get, and I know, right, you're on a football team and you think someone is something and they turn out to be something different. How many signs you had is a totally different story. But I don't get why they protected Aaron Hernandez in this documentary. I don't get that whatsoever. Aaron Hernandez, a vile person, why they did not go into any detail outside of just saying why he punched someone in a bar. Like, if I never knew about Aaron Hernandez, I'd be like, oh, that's so unfortunate. You had someone say racist things about you, and then good for you, punch him in the bar. But why should I give Tim Tebow the benefit of the doubt when he was hanging out with Aaron Hernandez? And I don't know what actually happened, but that's the only real mention of Aaron Hernandez in the docuseries? Not the fact that the guy was a murderer? Not the fact that the guy was a POS? Like, nothing about him? That, to me, that was the giant elephant in the room. And they basically kind of went NCAA on you and just tried to scrub it away as if it never happened.
Were they afraid to ask the hard questions, or did no one want to talk about it?
That's a good question.
You couldn't tell?
No, because there was no, literally, outside of Tim Tebow talking about the bar fight and a video of Aaron Hernandez catching a touchdown and maybe like one other mention of Aaron Hernandez going there to Florida. No mentions of anything what Aaron Hernandez ended up being. None. I thought that was very disappointing. And maybe that's a little bit more personal for me because I'm a Pats fan and I loved Aaron Hernandez. And then you find out what he was actually doing and it's like, I can't believe I was rooting for that guy. But how, and there's been a lot of documentaries that his family has participated in, Aaron Hernandez. And how you're not going to get into any of that and get like Urban Meyer's thoughts and get other players' thoughts, that's really inconceivable to me. So anyway, that was that on the Swamp Gods, I think is what they're calling that docuseries. We just had Deion Sanders on. We'll replay that for you if you missed it at 9:40 p.m. Eastern, 6:40 p.m. Pacific. Always love when we get to chat with Deion Sanders. He said he expects to win. I don't know when they're going to win. Remember, they have some talent that did come in. A lot of roster changes. He brought his Louis Vuitton luggage with him, as he said in that introductory meeting with the team. This is a football program that had one win last year. Hickey, you're Mr. College Football. I'll just ask you this. How do you define success this season for Deion Sanders in year one with the Colorado Buffaloes?
Four more wins. You're 4-8. Anything better than that, I would say, is a big-time success with how bad this program is. And what he's taken over. I know he's transferred, brought in a lot of transfers. This team's still really bad. Really bad.
I would say if they get to 5 wins, you should be doing backflips. And I know that Deion Sanders isn't someone that's going to be doing backflips over being below 500 and winning 5 games, but you got to remember, this is their final year in the Pac-12. Pac-12's tough conference this year. Like, you open up the year against TCU and Nebraska. I know TCU is going to take a step back, but TCU still should win that game. And then Nebraska's in week 2. Like, could they beat Nebraska? I guess. But if you win one of those games, that'd be a big win. Right now, I think most people chalk it up to 0-2. Then Colorado State is a win. You play Oregon, USC back-to-back weeks. Loss. You play Arizona State, could be a win. You play Stanford, could be a win. UCLA, I know they lost Dorian Thompson-Robinson and Zach Charbonnet, but they still have Chip Kelly. Probably a loss. Oregon State, they have DJ Uiagalelei now. Probably a loss. And they're the 18th team in the country. A lot of people are optimistic about them. Then you play Arizona. Oh, that could be a win. Then you're going to Washington State. Always a tough environment. And then you end the season with Utah. So, like, you go through that schedule. There's only, like, four, like, one game that you'll definitely win in Colorado State. But then outside of that, like, you look at Arizona State, Stanford, and Arizona, like, none of those programs really expect much out of them. But it's not as if they're slam dunk wins for Colorado, a program that, yes, there's been a lot of changes, but they only had one win a year ago. If you're 4 or 5 wins, and maybe you win a game that you're not expected to win that happens all the time in college football, that would be an enormous accomplishment for Deion Sanders here. But I'm excited. I can't wait to see how this plays on out. I've always been an advocate that Deion Sanders should get a big job. I'm not going to call Colorado a big job. I was advocating that he should have got the Auburn job in the SEC, and that didn't happen. They ended up going with Hugh Freeze after they flirted with Lane Kiffin. But I want to see what he could do here, because if he has a little bit of success at Colorado, you know a lot more teams are going to come calling. Zach Gelb, CBS Sports Radio. Blake Corum joins us next.